Well, hello there, folks. Welcome to another joyous week here on Joy 1250 of Where Your Health Matters with yours truly, Dr. Tony. Also live streamed at www.joy1250.ca. We have with us live in the studio tonight, you know, probably the most favorite guest that we've had on Where Your Health Matters with Dr. Tony here on Joy 1250, Avita O'Shells. So for those of you who, you know, are regular listeners to Where Your Health Matters with Dr. Tony here on Joy 1250, Avita O'Shell is by this point no stranger to our show. Since we've been on the air, we've had many, many guests and many, many shows, and our show library is building and building, and we're getting ready to launch our website with those podcasts. But, you know, one of the guests who's really captured a lot of you, and many of you have said, we just love her, we want her back. For those of you who are new to Avita, is the author of the book Healing and Prevention Through Nutrition, Natural and Holistic Approach for How to Eat, What to Eat, and Why for Optimal Health and Wellness. And Avita holds degrees in science and education, as well as certification in nutrition and natural health. Based on her own experiences, Avita knows the preventative and healing powers that nutrition holds, especially the power of a natural, wholesome diet. So, folks, we're going to be so pleased to once again bring to you here live in the Joy 1250 studio our guest, Avita O'Shell. Hey, Avita.
Hello, Dr. Tony. Wonderful to be back. And thank you so much for that warm, beautiful welcome.
Well, you know, it's a real joy every time you're here because, you know, every time you're here, I go off the next day and I actually try to do something better for my own health. Now, it may only last a few weeks, but at least I try. So I just want to know that you do have an impact.
Oh,
and it's
you.
Getting more and more sustainable over time.
Wonderful to hear. And you know, it's those steps that matter so much.
Yeah.
Taking, you know, every little step makes a difference.
Yeah, for sure. And, we've had your book featured here on Where Your Health Matters with Dr. Tony, Healing and Prevention Through Nutrition. You know, it one of the things that I noticed about your book is when you go through it, it's so practical, it's so accessible, and the points in it are just so crystal clear. I mean, I teach in the university, and the textbooks, the kids' eyes light over. I had your book in my office, and you know, I didn't ask for the student to pick it up. They just did because they're very inquisitive, and they were like, "This is an awesome book." And I'm like, "Put that down. That's my book." So, but it just it was unbelievable that they. It's so incredible. Like, how long did it take you to write this thing?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say the information has been with me now for several years. And then it just came to that point where once I sat down, it just flowed. And
wow.
I mean, it's not over-exaggerating to say that the book really came out all within 2 weeks. And then
wow.
It was just about editing over the next few months because the research and again, all the information that I've gathered over the years, it was just ready, so ripe to be out there and to help people. And as you mentioned, it's the practicality of it, the simplicity of it that is my core passion, to help people distill and dispel the myths and make sense of what to eat and how to eat, because it's just become such a confusing maze.
For sure. Now, one of the things I'd like to do today, our producer especially wanted to address the issue of this thing called preventative nutrition. And you know, if we want to speak to nutrition for women, a lot of our, I'd say perhaps half of our listeners are women for sure. What do we mean, first of all, by preventative nutrition?
Well, we have to understand that our food can help us prevent a lot of types of illnesses and ailments that, of course, none of us really want to live with or experience in our lives.
Right.
Because when we do, they take away from the quality of our life. It could be anything as simple as, you know, a headache that can sort of diminish an experience that you're about to have, whether it's, you know, make your workday harder or perhaps make an entertainment sort of event outing not as an enjoyable. So preventative nutrition means that when we take steps to use the power of our food to its benefit or to its most maximum, we can actually ward off, decrease, diminish, or completely prevent a lot of acute and chronic conditions.
Okay. Now, in terms of revisiting the definition of health and healthy in your book, Healing and Prevention Through Nutrition, which is your book, you talk about healthy as not simply being the absence of disease. What do you mean by that?
Very good question, because a lot of us think that as long as I don't have obvious symptoms, for example, like a pain,
right,
then I'm fine, then I'm healthy. But what we often miss or don't understand is that there's so much going on within our bodies. You know, one example that is so common in our society is, of course, cancer. And
right,
with cancer, there are things going on within our bodies for years. It could be for decades where the cancer cells are proliferating and we feel technically fine.
Right.
Usually there are no major symptoms or signs until that cancer has spread quite throughout, you know, different parts, or has perhaps formed into a tumor somewhere where we can actually feel or sense or detect in some way. So this is where I try to help people, encourage them and help them understand that your body needs to be looked after and taken care of on a regular basis to prevent things from actually manifesting and taking hold, rather than just trying to heal them and take care of them after they've taken
right
hold. I mean, yes, nutrition can also be very healing, but it's so much better, so much easier to prevent so much. Because again, our health, as we understand today, is not by chance we get some things.
Right.
We understand more and more the connections between the diseases we get and the lifestyle habits that we choose to have.
Yeah. One of the things our producer, Judy, was saying is, you know, whenever you go and you buy a house, there's apparently certain things that you can do to prevent things from going wrong with the house later, like making sure the foundation is sealed. And in my particular case, you know, with the car, you want to change your oil. You don't want to wait until your engine seizes before you go, oh, I think I better change the oil. And I guess what you're saying is we need to, if we're willing to do that with a house or our car, we should be doing that kind of thing with our bodies.
Well, exactly. And you brought up again such a great point about just something as simple as car maintenance. Most of us are so good and diligent about putting in the right gas, taking it for those regular inspections. But when we look at our bodies and
right,
what do we do for ourselves? Most of us don't even eat properly. We just throw in sort of anything and everything that's convenient.
Right.
And then not only that, but then we don't even take those regular sort of maintenance, you know, routines, or give ourselves some kind of care where maybe every 3 months we do some kind of a cleanse, or every few months we might
right
go for even just some kind of a natural treatment like acupuncture or reflexology that can help to readjust and bring us back to balance.
I love reflexology, I'll tell you. I always get my massage therapist, I say, can you do my toes and my fingers? Because I'll tell you, when she doesn't do it and I walk out, I don't feel as good as when she does do it. You know, now, Avita, one of these concepts that you mentioned is optimum health. What do you mean by optimum health?
And I'd like to address that also, because there's so many people in our society today talking about health, and a lot of experts, a lot of different people claiming, you know, this is healthy and that's healthy. My approach to health is from the side of optimum or optimal health, where I don't help people just have average health, as I like to call it, because so much of our mainstream just sort of tells everybody, oh, you know, everything in moderation, which is the very popular, typical line. And to me, everything in moderation gives you health in moderation. So
right,
you can also have disease in moderation.
Right.
I really try to take people on a journey to optimal health, because I know our bodies can exist in perfect health when we nurture them, but not just only from a body perspective, but this goes back to the idea that total health is not just the absence of disease, but we also take care of our mind health, our mental health.
Right.
Of course, to take into account, you know, what about our sleep? What about our movement? What about our spiritual health?
Right.
That's something that a lot of people, you know, don't consider as part of the whole package.
For sure. And the whole concept of everything in moderation, I mean, it seems that this is a kind of that buzzword. It's a belief system. It's even a mantra, you know, for many people. I know I was a big proponent of that. I had no clue what I was talking about. And I guess it's when you mentioned to me, you know, what does it mean to do things in moderation anyway? It seems so like this. I used to just say it and I thought it was, you know, an absolute. And here I was, you know, surrounded by my doctor friends, and even they were talking about everything in moderation. But again, in your book, you take a very specific stance on the term moderation. So one of the things you say is moderation average versus optimal? What you're saying is that there is no such thing as moderation, or there is no such real thing as average when it comes to whatever we're ingesting or consuming or disease. The term optimal, but how do we measure that?
Well, it's, you know, even that is hard to measure because, you know, okay. the more we overuse something in society, the more I find that the definitions start to get watered down and skewed right. and everybody puts their own spin on it. So my simple piece of advice to people when it comes to using the term everything in moderation or eating or drinking or consuming something in moderation is to really ask themselves, what does that mean to me? Because what I find is when I ask people to define that, they can't. And this is right. this is the point that scientifically there is no magic number as in, okay, what does eating cookies in moderation mean? Is it once a week? Is it once a day? Is it once a month?
Right.
And of course, our bodies are so dynamic and so unique too that moderation, even if it was defined for one person, is not going to work for another. And I know in our society, we do try to clump people as the general, you know, but I find that, yes, it can be beneficial in some ways, but it can also hurt in so many other ways. And today, as a society, we have just sort of relied on that everything in moderation. I find personally just too much as an excuse and as a cop-out to excuse poor habits.
Right. And I even noticed, like, I mean, I see it. When I'm eating healthy or, you know, and there's certain things I do eat, I feel energized. I feel great. But I've been noticing this because, you know, even producer Judy noticed when I eat the wrong things. She'll be like, she'll see me sometimes and I'll just get all of a sudden in a bad mood and I'll be miserable and it was because, you know, I had like the crispy chicken sandwich from KFC, right? Or for example, you know, I noticed I'll go walk into the university and people go, wow, you look miserable and tired and you just look drained. Well, that's because I snuck a burrito from Taco Bell. And you know, and then you realize you really are what you eat. And it's becoming more and more pronounced with me as I noticed as I change my diet. To try and get better incrementally, when I do eat something bad, it seems to have almost an instant impact on my being. Is that something that you've noticed?
Absolutely. And, you know, I love to hear stories like that from people because when it becomes experiential and when your body starts to talk to you and when you're, of course, open enough to listen, that's when it becomes real. And that's when I find people make the most changes and the most significant changes.
Right.
Because for so long and for too long and for too many of us, we tend to ignore our body's signs and symptoms. And when something flares up that we don't like, mm-hmm. we run out to, you know, usually the drugstore and take whatever it is that can quickly subside those symptoms rather than listening and saying, wait a minute, what triggered this?
Right.
What did I just perhaps eat or expose myself to? Or even what kind of, you know, environment mentally, emotionally was I in or did I allow myself? So absolutely, our bodies do tell us when we are more on the right track or more on the wrong track. So I'm really glad to hear that experiential part, you know, has been real for you as well.
Yeah, or just even when I eat, like I notice I eat, just, I'm getting a little bit too much sodium. And I just realized that I get really more agitated and antsy. It seems, you know, a little bit more irritable. I talked to my doctor about it and he actually said, nope, that's actually true because that high level of sodium are pushing limits, especially as you get older. So now I hear some people say all the time that they eat healthy. They judge their health based on the fact that they don't eat a lot of sweets. There's actually somebody the other day said, you know, his resolution for next year will be not to eat as many sweets, you know, or fried foods, for example. But is it enough for people to say, hey, I'm not going to eat enough sweets or fried food? Is it enough for them just to say that and try to work towards that?
Well, I think every goal and you know, every good intention is valuable in to some respect. I think that even something like you mentioned to begin with, the resolutions, why wait till January 1st?
Right.
I say to people, you know, every moment is right now. Every moment is the most perfect moment for you to take a different approach, for you to make a different choice. We don't need to wait for Mondays. We don't need to wait for the first of the month or the first of the year. Every single moment is precious for you to take preventative steps and start to heal your body, especially depending if, you know, it needs that. And for most of us, in some ways, it does. So when it comes to, you know, saying that, oh, I won't eat as many sweets or maybe not as much fried chicken or whatever it may be, I think those are, again, just good intentions, but too often they're surface level intentions.
Right.
We're just more saying the right stuff, but we're not really connecting the dots.
Right.
Because we need to, again, understand what is it about those foods that I really don't want to put them into my body. And the biggest thing that comes up here also is people think of them often as treats.
Right.
And I try to dispel that too and say it can't be a treat if it's harming your body.
Right.
So we can't say, oh, I'm just going to keep those bad things as a treat. It just, to me, that's just, you know,
it's
a contradiction.
Yeah, it's counterproductive in a way. Yeah. I mean, you get called to speak all over the place. You know, your book is really picked up a lot of steam in a lot of different circles. When you address issues of prevention and nutrition, when you're invited to speak, is there any common theme that you notice that people ask you to speak on more than the other, if you will?
It's actually been quite a variety of topics. So there, I mean, the biggest one, of course, is really just getting to the basics of how to eat. I find this really, if there was one most common theme, it comes down to that, because people, the most common complaint or question I always get from people is they're so upset as to why is it so hard to eat healthy? Why is it so hard to make sense of, you know, whether it's nutrition labels or whether it's just, you know, hearing all the different claims on TV and the media?
Right.
Why does it have to be so hard? So this is one of my biggest things, is that I try to help people, again, come back to basics,
right.
Simplify, make sense, because it shouldn't be hard. As I really always try to stress is, eating right is our birthright.
Right.
You shouldn't need a nutrition degree to know how to feed yourself right. And again, it comes down to redefining for ourselves, what does healthy mean and what am I going to do about it?
Right.
Because again, in our society in general, it can be dismissed in so many ways so easily, and we see that it's just not working.
Right. Before I get into my second question, what are the, and I want you to perhaps just touch on, what are the simple foods? Can you give us like, you know, the 5-6 top simple foods that we should all be eating, the basics?
Absolutely. Well, the key word is real and whole.
Okay.
So we're thinking here, the basics of fruits and vegetables. And again, whole fruits and vegetables, not canned, not juiced, not, you know, processed in any way, shape, or form, just real. Going into that produce section and picking out some of those beautiful colors, natural textures, etc. And of course, even better if you can get yourself to a farmer's market, because of course, local and many of the farmers today are also selling organic produce, which is also,
right.
You know, a much better way to go today, for sure. And then when we talk about real and simple whole foods, we're thinking again of the real whole grains. Too often today we rely on the whole grain bandwagon, which is, you know, sort of masked behind so many processed foods as so many processed foods. So I tell people, see the grain. Do you see the real grain in your food? If you don't, then again, going to the simple whole grain, like brown rice. I see brown rice. That is a real whole food. When I have products made of brown rice flour, that is removed.
Right.
And again, if people are interested in meats and, for example, dairy, going to see a real piece of chicken, not, you know, a chicken nugget or chicken that has been already breaded and fried for you or whatever the case may be. So real, whole, simple, going back to the basics. And for a lot of people, when I share this with them, they say, oh, so you mean just like my grandparents used to eat.
Right.
And, you know, that's one way of looking at it, that yes, we do want to get out of those packages and back onto the way Mother Nature, I say, intended.
It was amazing because I a few times I've had recently, because of you, I guess, you know, and your influence on the show and our producer, and, I've had the virtue of trying organic free-range chicken. And I'm not a big chicken. I don't like chicken. But I'll tell you, it tastes different, and it was really, really delicious. So much that, you know, I was at the house, and I began to eat chicken, and they said, you need to leave some for other people. So, but, you know, it was just unbelievable. What makes that difference?
And that's such a good point, too, and something that I know myself personally and so hear from so many other people, that when they taste a lot of the organic, whether it's produce or the meats or even the dairy, it's unbelievable, they say, how different tasting it is. So part of that difference that we have to understand is that foods that are grown organically, generally speaking, are grown without so many of the chemicals, the synthetic fertilizers.
Right.
They're grown in much more natural, wholesome, sustainable ways. And they're also not, if I can say more, you know, factory farmed, where they're grown and cultivated and produced unnaturally,
right.
Which decreases, like, for example, with the animals that are from the factory farms are fed unnaturally. They're not fed, you know, the organic
right.
free-range chicken, for example, would be fed a more natural diet. For example, feeding, you know, cows corn is not natural to them.
Right.
That will change their biochemistry, their body composition, in turn their meat that people are going to eat.
Right.
Same thing with the chickens, etc. So that's just one example.
Yeah.
So when our fruits and vegetables, same thing, are grown in much richer soils where the fruit or the vegetables extracting its own nutrients out of the natural field, right, rather than the chemicals, it changes the taste. It changes the, you know, some people still claim, oh, there's not enough studies saying this or that about their nutrition being better. To me, from everything that I've seen, and again, it comes down to experience, personal experience, I just know that there's just no way they're not going to be better based on, you know, everything that comes together.
It was really fascinating. I don't know if you saw it, just on the CBC the other day, on the documentary Doc Zone, they featured a documentary on the organic industry and so forth. And one of the things they showed was that in organically grown fruits and vegetables, the soil is actually better than the industrial or conventional farming soil, which gets depleted of nutrients and so forth in order to grow more. And a lot of people thought, well, if we try to do things organically, we won't be able to have sustainability with our soil and so forth. But what they found, it was actually the opposite, that they're having more sustainability with the soil when they're growing organically. And it was just fascinating, just a fascinating piece that they did. And it was a very skeptical piece, which, because they're, you know, they're always very skeptical, but it was very counterintuitive. And so anyway, very fascinating. But one of the things I want to ask you, Avita, is do you ever identify different nutritional needs for men versus women in terms of your journeys?
There's definitely a few key foods, or specifically if we go into the healing herbs and things like that, that can help women at times more than men, or men more than women.
Right.
But in general, I do say that to both, you know, men and women, everybody, from, you know, whether you're, you know, 1 month old, and of course the best food for them is the mother's breast milk. But no matter how young you are to how old you are, everybody's core food and nutrition should come first and foremost from vegetables. For all of men's issues, for all of women's issues, there are so many benefits there that can be so preventative and so healing. So vegetables, and then of course secondary fruits, that's a key for everyone.
Right.
Now, of course, for men and for women, some differences will exist. For example, women tend to be more prone to osteoporosis.
Right.
And so we know that there has been a big push for women to take their calcium more seriously.
Right.
Now, when it comes to calcium supplements, of course, there is they have especially recently been getting more and more controversial with ties to heart disease and hardening of the arteries.
Right.
So what I try to help people understand is, especially for women, is it's not so much how much calcium you're going to be putting in from these external pill or synthetic or supplemental sources, but how well are you maintaining your bones?
Right.
And that comes not just only to nutrition, but also the exercise movement. And one of the reasons why men have an easier time maintaining healthy and strong bones is just because they have a better, generally speaking, muscle composition, and that helps to build stronger bones also. So there are slight differences, and of course we can get into some of those, but in general it's good for everyone to have that good foundation of vegetables, fruits, and then a whole, again, natural food diet for both sexes is key.
I went to a Japanese restaurant yesterday, and I noticed these root vegetables, which seem different than regular vegetables. Do you know the difference between those two? I found it very fascinating, and they tasted quite interesting, and I don't really recall ever having really tasted or been aware of these root vegetables. What's the difference between those two, and do they have similar effects or different effects?
Well, botanically, we can split the vegetables up into several categories.
Okay.
So we do have the root vegetables, for example, like carrots or radishes would be considered root vegetables.
Right.
Then we've got, you know, the leafy vegetables, which would be like your lettuce on your kale.
Right.
We've got the even tuber vegetables, which would be like your potatoes, and some of the stem vegetables, which would be, or the stalk vegetables like celery. So there are definitely different parts of the plant that do give different nutritional benefits.
Right.
And we have just learned to cultivate the best part of the plant. Like, for example, we can eat the rhubarb stalk, but we don't want to eat the rhubarb leaves. So learning how to work with nature, where are the powerful healing preventative sort of qualities or characteristics of the plant, and which ones should we perhaps not eat because they actually might not be so good for us for different reasons.
Right. Okay. So you get part of the vegetable and another part. But okay, interesting. I just found it fascinating because I was like, what's this vegetable? So often we eat something or drink something that we know will make us feel unwell, yours truly, Dr. Tony, included. And by the time we're done, you know, we realize that we're not feeling that great. Why do you think we punish our bodies? Why do I punish my body or ignore what we should know better?
I think a big chunk of that comes down to consciousness, and that's really the root of my work, is helping people with consciousness expansion in every area of their life. So one of my key areas, of course, is the topic of nutrition and helping people understand how to be conscious with how they choose their food and why they choose their food and what they eat, when, why, how much of it, etc. But it just, I think in our society, we're just so busy. There's so many things competing for our attention. And so we often find that we need something perhaps that will even give us a little bit of satisfaction or comfort, that even if it comes at a price later, we're willing to pay that price almost, you know, because for that kind of quick fix of good feeling in that short moment. So that's one of the biggest things, I think.
Yeah, and one of the things I had is, you know, I went to the movies and I didn't just have one hot dog. I decided I'm going to go for it and had two, and I was sick for a week.
Oh no!
You know, and so the comfort, you know, is sometimes is so after that, I think I've learned my lesson. And even though the next time I wanted to do it again, I just didn't. You know, because but it's a hard way of learning, I'll tell you.
It is, but you know what? It's those types of lessons, though, that they once they add up, I find that there is this turning point where, you know, something changes within us, and we say enough. Enough. I just don't want to go down that road anymore.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for some people, it comes through painful experiences. Hopefully it doesn't get to that disease stage, etc.
Right.
But it's a beautiful turning point when it happens,
right,
because that's when it becomes real. And it becomes, I find, a long term change rather than, oh, I'm forbidding myself to eat that.
Yeah.
No, we're not forbidding ourselves from anything.
Yeah.
We're just knowing consciously that this is just not the way to go for us.
It's not going to be a good choice. There won't be a good outcome. One of the things that you did mention is that, you know, women tend to perhaps be more prone to osteoporosis. You've got to get that word out. On a population scale, more so than men, for different reasons, that is. And also, I guess, when we look at some of the population studies, we see that there's a lot of women who have thyroid issues, perhaps more disproportionately. But one of the things is that, you know, you would assume that women tend to be healthier eaters. I don't know if that's true. Have you found that to be the case?
Generally, yes. I don't like to, you know, sort of
yep.
box men and women into different groups. But generally speaking, yes, I do find that women tend to be more proactive with their health. I mean, I think any doctor can attest to that, that women are the ones who will be more prone to coming in for their regular checkups and exams, whereas men will wait and wait and wait. And usually, even when something's wrong, they tend to neglect or not want to sort of deal with it. And the same thing I find has been happening with food and nutrition, whereas women do tend to be more proactive in terms of what they put in their body, whether it's always for the right reasons or not, it just tends to be this way, whereas men tend to be a little bit more lenient with what they put in, and I think they can handle sort of more. But unfortunately, as we're seeing today, both stats in the sexes, it is a big problem for both.
Now, I noticed there's some of my peers and colleagues, won't mention any names, but, you know, I notice what they eat, you know, I noticed they're eating carrots and they're eating quinoa, and, you know, they seem to have these impeccable diets, and they're exercising, and they're female. And there's me, and you know, I'm not eating the greatest, and then all of a sudden I get a little bit smart and I do start to eat a little bit and take a few walks here and there, and I start to lose weight, and people look at me and go, wow, you've lost weight. And then the person who's sitting there exercising, and she's a woman, she goes, I can't seem to lose weight. Is there a different, why is it just an imagination, or is it harder for women to lose weight more than men?
It is. Generally speaking, again, it is. And one of the biggest reasons, again, comes down to muscle tone. Men do tend to have more muscle tone than women.
Okay.
And the more muscle you have, generally speaking, is the faster or better you tend to burn fat or not store it.
Right.
And so this is where I always encourage women to do some weight-bearing exercises. It's often so overlooked. Many women sort of think, oh, but I don't want to build big muscles. It's not about building big muscles and losing your feminine figure. It is about the fact that your bones get best built from resistance exercises like weight-bearing exercises. And the second thing is that the more we maintain or, you know, nurture or build our muscles, the more easier it is for us to sort of keep the weight off to begin with and then lose the weight if we do have some to lose.
Right.
So that's one of the biggest things. The other thing is, of course, there are different hormonal issues for men and women and different hormones at play. play that make it sometimes harder, sometimes easier. Women tend to also deal differently with stress that will influence their hormones differently, and then, of course, make that weight try to stay on more. So if we take two people, one a man, one a woman, both have, you know, let's pretend 50 pounds to lose, both weigh exactly 200 pounds. For the men, generally speaking, it's going to be much easier to lose and much faster he will notice the difference than for the women. I know sometimes, you know, that's kind of depressing for the woman when her husband is, you know, eating the same, doing the same, and she's sort of struggling with a pound a week and he's, you know, 3 pounds, 4 pounds, 5 pounds, you know, are sort of melting off. But that's just, generally speaking, the nature of it. And it's something, once we understand, not to lose hope and not to lose your steam that, oh, forget it, I'm trying this and it's not even working. It is working. It's just going to take a little bit longer usually.
Not to lose hope. So, Abida, can you tell our listeners, what are some of the most common complaint or ailments for women that you've been able to identify?
Well, the thyroid condition is definitely one of the main ones that you've already mentioned.
Right.
So many women, and it's just incredible and so sad also to see how much the thyroid problems have been on an increase, it seems, especially hypothyroidism, which, of course, makes it even harder for women to lose weight when we go back to, you know, just talking about that. So
right.
Thyroid issues have been big. The other biggie is adrenal fatigue. This is something that, unfortunately, hits a lot of women by surprise, and it tends to happen often around, you know, when they're perhaps in their 35 kind of range, especially around their 40s, 50s. And this is something that doesn't always even get addressed properly. Women just say, I'm so tired all the time. I seem to have no energy. And I don't feel well from this perspective, that perspective. Technically, it doesn't seem like, you know, something's wrong, but something is wrong. And they know
right.
inside that, you know, some of the energy is drained. And so adrenal fatigue is also huge in our population, especially among women. And of course, we also already mentioned the osteoporosis. That's also a biggie. And of course, heart disease. But heart disease goes for both men and women, equally striking pretty much today. And same thing with the cancers, except that, of course, for women, it will tend to be more of the breast and the ovarian cancer, whereas for men, it will be more of the prostate cancers.
Right. And that's a really key thing, because I noticed there's been some campaigns from the Heart and Stroke Association and so forth, basically, you know, putting out these commercials of the risk factors of heart disease amongst women, because it seemed that for a long time that it was more men. But what it seems that the research is showing is that women are as susceptible as men are as well.
That's right. That's right. And again, for women, it's, you know, we talked before that women tend to be healthier, at least eat healthier, take better care of their health. And somebody might be asking, but why then? Why do they seem that both the sexes seem to be hit at the same rate? But we have to understand that eating healthy isn't everything.
Right.
That's a big chunk of your health, but it's not everything. So this is something that I try to encourage people to understand and reflect on in their life and sort of address, is what other parts of your health are you perhaps neglecting? And this is when it comes to not just physical health, but how is your emotional health and your mental health?
Right.
And of course, that's something in your field that you also, I'm sure, work with people a lot with in the mental health field, how that impacts one's health. So I find that when there's, for example, a lot of unresolved issues, when there's a lot of anger, when there's a lot of negativity in people, that can tend to have a huge biochemical action on the body, which in turn can manifest and, you know, as many different types of diseases, heart disease being one of them.
Right. Yeah, no, and I mean, even in my clinical practice, one of the things that I've been probing a lot with my mental health clientele is asking them, how much water are you drinking, and are you eating green things? You know, the common answer is, no, I'm not drinking enough water and I'm not eating anything green. So I try to encourage them just to go and do that and then check with their doctor on other matters that they need to. But it's amazing when they come back that they go, wow, I'm drinking like 12 glasses of water like you told me a day and I'm feeling better.
Absolutely. And again, it goes back to, you know, once somebody feels the difference and the change for themselves, it becomes so much more real. And they tend to stick with it because now their body is feeling so good that why not continue or keep that up? So that's a great motivator, I find, for people.
Yeah, for sure. Now, what advice or recommendations can you provide to, let's say, women as they are, in fact, trying to achieve their optimal health? You basically talked about, you know, adrenal fatigue and hypothyroidism and osteoporosis as those kind of those bigger types of diseases or illnesses that impact women more disproportionately. So are there any types of strategies that for optimal health for women that you can identify?
Yes, absolutely. One of the biggest culprits that actually depletes both women's adrenals and also their bones is something like coffee. And this is not something that, of course, I know still a lot of people like to hear, especially, you know, in and around the cities where we have so many coffee shops and something that we all seem to frequent so readily. But this is something that I always say to people, you know, I can tell you what you want to hear or I can tell you what you need to hear. And I prefer to do the latter.
Right.
Because I don't like to sugarcoat it for anybody. I like to make it real and practical, and I really genuinely want to help. So coffee, the removal of coffee, or at least a great reduction of coffee, is a huge step in the right direction for women. Because, again, that caffeine is huge at depleting the adrenals, leading to adrenal fatigue as one of the main things, and also causing a chronic acidic state in the body, which also has a negative effect on the bones, which then in turn leads to, of course, weaker bones as we age, etc. And of course, not only those two, but it also plays on their emotions, on their nervous system, etc. So that's one of the biggies, because when we, you know, just take in the calcium supplements, that's not enough when we're constantly almost at a zero or a negative balance when we're depleting them also. So for women, I'd like to say definitely reevaluate your coffee intake. For any women who are drinking soda or heavy on the teas other than herbal teas, that's another step to kind of reevaluate and put in as much high quality foods, especially greens, which are always invigorating and helpful in many different ways. Antioxidants, which are pretty much in every fruit and vegetable, but especially in things like the berry families, those are always good to put in because they're healing and preventative is, you know, for things like cancers, etc. And also to not just watch the food, but for women especially, they put on so many different chemicals on their bodies. You know, I forgot the exact number, but it's something very extreme that by the time the woman leaves her house in the morning, how many different chemicals she has on her body, from the perfumes to the makeup to the different soaps and lotions. And this also has a big effect, women don't realize, even on their thyroid and how that all links together. So for the ladies, I say reevaluate what you're putting on your body, just like what you're putting into your body.
One of the things that I encouraged, I remember a female friend of mine at one point, as I said, just put on a helmet. not only do you have to, it'll cut down on the, it'll keep you safe as well. But anyway, there you go. She was a bit awkward and would bump into things. So, so I'm going to conversely, going to throw this one out then. What about men then? Like, is there anything, obviously, you know, getting rid of coffee from the diet, prevent osteoporosis, you know, the adrenal fatigue and so forth. What about for men? Is there any key tip specifically for men that you would advise?
Absolutely. For men, it tends to be two big things that tend to plague or be more prevalent in men more. And that is animal products, specifically meat. We do have this common idea in society that you're not a real man unless you eat meat and lots of it. And we know today, for example, that colon cancer is hugely tied to diets that are too low in fiber and too high in things like meats and animal proteins and animal products. And not to mention, of course, all the effects of the different chemicals in our environments as well. So for men, definitely to reevaluate your meat consumption and your meat intake. We are a society that is still obsessed about protein when we don't realize we're getting too much of it for our own good on a regular basis for the most part. And the other biggie for men is also to reevaluate their alcohol intake, because that seems to be very big with men also. You know, it seems to be such a harmless little thing, getting together with the guys or maybe perhaps around the barbecue every weekend, a pack of beer or, you know, et cetera, whatever.
Beer and burgers.
Yes, meat. Well, there you go.
Alcohol and meat.
Exactly. And those are two of the biggest things that are harming men. And there have been links, like I said, to prostate health. Not only that, but also to your liver. Men do tend to have more problems with their liver, also with even things like their gallbladder, with their pancreas, with, you know, stomach. So it tends to add up. And so those would be the two biggies that I really invite men to reevaluate in their life.
Very useful. Very, very useful. Wow. And I mean, these are... I don't think I've ever heard this before. You know, it's amazing. I appreciate when you come in here. Now I'm going to actually begin to reevaluate some things with myself after that. Now, when it does come to a cancer, MS, cardiovascular disease, where can people start in terms of the question is, where can we start in terms of preventative nutrition?
Well, that's the good place to start. If you're dealing with pretty much, you know, being in good health, or at least that you consider yourself to be in good health at this point, then I say prevention is, should be, you know, your best investment.
Right.
We often think about investments at the banking, you know, terminals and things like that. Your biggest investment should be your body and your health. So if you're dealing with prevention, wonderful, wonderful, and keep using your food as the best method to get there. Again, diets high in natural, whole, plant foods are key, hopefully as much as possible on the organic, local, and raw side. But if you are dealing with something that needs to have your attention, basically, to be healed, whether it's a thyroid condition or whether it's, you know, heart disease or whatever it is, the good news is that today we know we can reverse or at least diminish the effects of almost everything. And this is the best part. And the most, you know, again, we like to leave people with hope. And that is really the best part. So where to start with that? It depends really what condition you are, you know, sort of suffering from, or how bad or how advanced it is. But a lot still can be done with food. You can get to a great place, you know, just by changing your diet alone. But depending on the condition, I would also invite people to work with a naturopath, somebody who is more skilled at, you know, addressing and examining what supplements you may also need, at what stages and why. Because once we get into dealing with conditions, even foods, we underestimate how powerful they can be, and they could upset, you know, some balance, especially for people who are already on medication.
Right, for sure. Now, one of the key things I want to ask you, and I, there's so much misinformation out there, and unfortunately, where some of the most, I don't want to use the inappropriate word, but I'm just going to throw it out. I mean, there was a documentary. It was obviously on mainstream television, CBC, and so. You know, what they were saying was quite accurate. They said, you know, certified organic is, generally speaking, certified organic, and it goes through rigorous testing, and they have to meet certain conditions. You throw around the word raw a lot, which you're basically saying it means raw. You know, organic and raw are probably two good things. But there's this word natural, where we see this is natural, and, you know, natural this or natural that. Apparently, that has no bearing on whether or not it's actually natural. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. That's such a good one. And like you said, it's kind of easy for us to pretty much get what organic and what raw means. But
right,
when it comes to natural, that is another one that, just like the word healthy, you know, I hear so many times people say, oh, I'm healthy, I'm eating healthy. But when you really examine it down to the basics, what does that mean? And same thing with natural. We hear today, oh, this food is natural. Or, you know, you're walking out perhaps and you're seeing a banana cake and it's advertised all natural. Well, what does that mean?
Right.
Or a shampoo, all natural. And so it is harder, I find, to really get people to understand the gist of what that means. But when I use it, and what I try to help people understand, is always thinking of how nature provided it for you.
Right.
Nature doesn't bottle stuff for us.
Right.
Right. So it's going back to, okay, if I'm thinking of what does a natural apple mean, it means an apple from the tree in its original whole form. It doesn't mean an apple that's been processed. So if it says natural apple juice, well, yes, hopefully it has no preservatives, no chemicals, no things like that. But again, it's already a step away from the original natural apple.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's fascinating. It almost seems like misleading ad promotion, if you will, or misleading advertising. Now, one of the things you did speak to, just in passing, as you were addressing some of the remedies that, or some of the remedies or foods, nutritions that we can look at in terms of disease, you did say, you know, you can go to a naturopath. Of course, you go to a doctor, or in this case, go to a naturopath. They're both, they're two types of doctors. You know, I think they're both useful, You mentioned that sometimes you can get these supplements, what are these vitamins, minerals? What are these kind of supplements that could help people out here and there?
Well, today, the market of supplements is huge, and it encompasses so many different products.
Right.
So yes, vitamins go under the grand, you know, sort of umbrella of supplements. So do minerals,
right.
But so do herbs, and so do supplements such as fish oils, for example. So do supplements that are different elixirs or parts of plants or extracts. So there's just so much. And anybody who's ever walked into, as we know today, the growing line of different health food stores and you know, supplements. supplement stores,
right.
we see that there's just so much out there. So when it comes to all these different supplements, one of the biggest things I try to relate to people is not to get overwhelmed and not to buy into needing everything that is mentioned, because so often we are wasting so much of our money, wasting our liver and our kidneys to process the stuff that we maybe probably didn't need in the first place.
Right.
So to work with them very wisely. And again, this is where it's always best to sort of consult somebody else if you're not sure about should you be taking it or not. For some of us, it's easy. It can be, you know, some research, like we know that vitamin C is really great, for example, at boosting our immune system or giving us some extra, you know, antioxidant care from time to time. That's fine. But some people really take it over the edge and really try to self-medicate through all these supplements, thinking they're harmless when they could actually end up, you know, causing themselves more harm than good.
Now, I mean, I went to my pharmacist, for example, locally, really a great guy. And he said, you know, he really was pushing the Swiss brand of supplement, which I found the Swiss magnesium tablet was like about 2 centimeters big, and it was really huge. And, you know, I finished off the bottle, and it was just brutal. Now, I finally went back to get my Life brand one at Shoppers Drug Mart, which were a lot more swallowable, if that's a word. I could digest it a lot easier. Are all of these brands out there relatively the same thing? How do we measure potency? Do we check with a doctor? When I said to my – I went and checked with my family doctor, and his feedback to me was – just throw it all away. Don't even bother with it. You know, just, you know, eat right and take your medication. What's been your experience with the different multitudes of brands of supplements out there?
Definitely, they're not all the same or of the same quality. Many of them do try to come across as the same, but what we have to understand is the differences can be huge.
Right.
Yes, there are good practices, standards, and things like that that are trying to be put into place to regulate different potencies and purities and even the origin if it uses herbs and things like that. But it only takes, and I always say to people, look at the ingredient list of your supplements, because we think, oh, I'm just taking vitamin B or just taking vitamin A. But you're not. If you look, every pill bottle today, every supplement, whether it's a vitamin, mineral, herb, supplement, whatever it is, has an ingredient list. And there's
right.
other things in there as well. So what sets, for example, a higher quality one from a lower quality one is some of these additives or ingredients. For example, in a typical cheap store brand, perhaps a multivitamin, you could find, you know, artificial colors and fillers and thickeners and stabilizers. Those are not things that are meant to, you know, be enhancing my health, which is why I think I'm taking these multivitamins in
right.
the first place. So there's definite differences in quality, and I do encourage people to do some research on a brand and not be driven by the price, because so often we do get what we pay for. And so if you're looking for the $3 item because the $9 seems too much, well, it's not necessarily going to be in your best interest.
Right. Yeah, it's one. We had a community meeting that we were trying to address some of the youth problems going on in the Toronto area, and one of our one of my friends who was supposed to show up there called me the morning. He said, "I just drank a protein shake," and he got very sick. Couldn't even come to the meeting. Very important meeting. Couldn't even come. And I checked with him 5 days later, and he's still sick from this protein shake. I can only imagine that was not a great supplement.
No, and you know, just the fact that you mentioned protein shakes, there are so many, and I've helped people to sort of decipher what is in some of these shakes, because again, they've become popular in the last few years as people again try to put in more protein when they don't need that usually in the first place. But anyhow, it just tends to be a quick, convenient, easy way to, you know, up the protein. And again, there's so many different things in these products that could, you know, upset or be allergenic in nature or whatever the case may be. So again, looking at the ingredients, doing some research. It really takes us to be more responsible today. And I know some people say it's not fair, you know, I shouldn't have to do all spend all this time, the government or perhaps the health agency should do it. But I say, you know what will empower you more? To point
right.
fingers or to just say, you know what, my body, my health, I'm going to take responsibility.
Yeah. And I have a little motto that I say, you know, when in doubt, don't trust the bureaucracy.
Yes.
Now, of course, you know, we love it every time you're on our show, and you're just so incredibly informative. And, you know, and I mean that in a way that is unparalleled, because you are – you know, it's been amazing because, you know, our last guest, you know, and yourself just have made things so comprehensible, so accessible, not just for our audience, but for myself, which means it's probably going to be accessible for our audience. But one of the things you've emphasized in the past is the need to detoxify our external environment and as well as our inside environment. Can you just elaborate a little bit that just as a closing kind of comment for this segment?
Absolutely. And I think it's a beautiful way to sort of wrap up because it ties back to what we talked about at the start about taking care of your car. So let's also take care of our bodies, just like we would our car, our clothes, our home, whatever it is the case may be. Let's understand that our bodies need regular maintenance and care as well. And of course, one of the ways that we can do this is through some kind of a regular cleansing or detox. It doesn't have to be anything fancy or something that doesn't make you comfortable. But today we know that we live in an environment where whether it's the air, the water, the food, we are intaking a lot of different toxins. And one of the ways that you can help your body so much is by looking into different ways to cleanse it. Just upping your fiber intake is one of the easiest ways. Perhaps doing a juice fast, that's another way. Perhaps going to do a colon cleanse, that's another way. So many different ways exist, and we can do it. Step by step, we definitely can.
Avita Oshel, it's been just an absolute pleasure and delight having you here on Where Your Health Matters with Dr. Tony again on Joy 1250. Thank you so much for all of the tips, the information that you provide us. And thank you for writing your book, Healing and Prevention Through Nutrition. Folks, I would encourage you to get a hold of that. What's the website where they can get a hold of your book, Avita?
Best way and best place to start is avitaoshel.com or even evolvingwellness.com. All the information as to where to find the book and lots of free resources are there as well.
Thank you, Avita, and God bless you all. Thanks for tuning in to Where Your Health Matters with Dr. Tony each and every Sunday evening here on Joy 1250.